Welcome. You're listening to the Internet Advisor Podcast with your co-hosts, Gary Baker, Foster Brown, and their team of experts. Since 1998, this program has been helping people like you with your computer problems, introducing you to valuable resources and programs, and promoting tech businesses in our area. The Internet Advisor is a two-hour radio program heard weekly on WJR 760 AM in Detroit and across the state on the Michigan Talk Network. Now, here are your hosts with this week's Internet Advisor.
Welcome to the Internet Advisor, your place for answers to your computer questions since 1998, with your co-hosts Gary Baker and Foster Brown and their team of tech experts. The door is always open at InternetAdvisor.net, on Facebook, and through Twitter. But right now it's time to get you in touch with your helpful hosts on this week's edition of Internet Advisor.
Welcome to the Internet Advisor. Hi, I'm Foster Brown, the co-host of the program, and we have our merry band of tech experts in studio with us, and lots to talk about. This week has been just an avalanche of technology. Apple had all sorts of things they brought out. Google had all sorts of things we're going to talk about as well. And we're going to have the folks from AT&T in to talk about a plan that they have to help you lower costs when you travel overseas. You may not have to trade your phone in for another one in a foreign country. Welcome to the Internet Advisor, Foster Brown, with you, along with a posse full of rascals here, Mr. Gary Baker, my old fellow here for many years. Good to be with you again.
And we've been on the show for
many years.
Many years.
Just 16 and a half, I think it is.
16 and a half, you're right. Just 1 week off, and I remember it was jonesing to get back in here. Eddie, good to see you. Eddie Rudell.
You know, this weather really stinks. But I am glad to be in the studio where it's at least 72 degrees.
Oh, yeah. Temperature controlled in here. Kel Carson, good to have you with us as well, Bob.
Well, now we have stereo because there's two gray-haired old guys here.
Yeah. There you go. All that wisdom. And Shane Hamlin. We got the full crew.
I feel like a young child here once again. How you doing?
The only person who doesn't color his hair.
In the eye, in the world of the blind, yes. The one-eyed man is king.
Oh,
the only
boy.
Place you can go where, you know, 45 feels like young.
I know. I feel young.
This, too, will pay us.
Oh, yes. That is the truth. Well, folks, it's been a busy, busy week in terms of technology, and I've had fun following it on the road. As a matter of fact, Thursday, wasn't it, that the Apple release came down, I think it was.
Apple released something on Thursday?
Yeah. I didn't hear anything about that.
The world stopped. The Apple distortion field went up at that point.
Isn't it amazing that, you know, someone just going to just, they never have releases that are special for, like, soup? Or chicken or pencils. You know, it's just amazing how this happens.
Yeah. They do for cars.
Anything that we care a lot about.
Because we don't care about
it. It's almost like there's
much.
A time warp that happens, you know, when that goes on.
But cars, you know, we make a big deal of, you know, when we launch a new vehicle.
That's true. But Apple, I guess it all kind of has felt a little staged now. For a while, it was like, oh, wow, what's coming next? And after it was done, I thought to myself, what really happened here? We got a thinner iPad, a really fast one, a pretty one, et cetera, but
It's caught up to the rest.
It really has, and that's good. So many others that's out good. There competing right now as
not
well.
Not only caught up, but passed.
Yeah. Probably in some areas, but I'm not sure which ones.
Yeah,
so it went up from red eye to black eye?
What? I don't know. But, I mean, the bottom line is that, you know, for some reason or another, people got excited about the idea that they were announcing new product.
I think thinner. They're probably
thinner.
Oh,
it's definitely thinner. It's even thinner than the previous one.
Yep. Yeah. Well, but thinner than the competitors. I'm not sure what else, what
it's
other
lighter.
Features.
It's got a faster processor.
Yeah. And that's not faster than some of the Android. But anyway.
Are you sure?
All right, hang on, guys. We're going to spend some time wrangling about this.
There's
in
a
depth.
Rumble in the techno jungle.
Yeah, well, Rick Broyd is going to be with us shortly. We're going to be talking about that in depth.
He's definitive.
But we've got somebody with us who's peers every day that we are on the air here, and Mr. Mike Brennan, the editor of MI Tech News. Mike, good to have you with us.
Great, Foster. I hope you guys are playing nice in the studio.
No
they
fist fights yet.
They never do, and that's what makes it fun.
No fist fights yet.
I'll have to get between these two, I'm sure.
Oh, boy. Hey, Mike, let's talk about some of the headlines that you've been showing us through MI Tech News this week. One of them, and this is kind of interesting to me, is that the Governor Snyder is reviewing a bill that could affect how the Tesla products are sold.
Yeah, Tesla wants to sell direct to the public, which, of course, the franchise dealers in the state not real excited about that. So they changed the language. They slipped it in at the last minute, so it'd make it really, really hard, because what happened was Tesla appealed in Massachusetts and won there on the state Supreme Court, so they could sell direct.
Mm.
And so the Dealers Association slipped in some language real quick that everybody didn't notice. The governor has until October 21st to either sign the bill or veto the bill. But this will really be opening up a can of worms, and then it would allow other, you know, anybody else to come in and bypass the franchise sale system that's been in place, what, for 100 years or so.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh, and that would be bad for the consumer? Is that what anybody
No,
that'd
be great for the consumer. That's why the dealers don't want it. You
so
know?
Here's the question.
Oh, the guys that spend a lot of money on campaigns don't want it, but the rest of us would love it. Okay.
Now, Rick,
oh, absolutely.
I get it.
Pardon me, but, Governor Snyder, no, so a yay vote would mean what, Mike?
Well, if he signs it, it pretty much means that even if Tesla tries to appeal to the Michigan Supreme Court, because of the language, it would make it almost impossible for them to say, no, that's not right.
Okay.
If he vetoes it, there's a loophole in the language where they could do that then.
I get. Okay,
yeah,
good.
Tesla,
that's just
that's
helps me to understand it.
Yeah,
what's
and
at
it
stake
just
then.
Costs the customer more, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
All right, second item you got down there is there's a tech grants built Michigan school network with upgraded computers. Looks
right.
Good for all
the State Board of Education was told this week that there's been $41.5 million in grants and $50 million more next year and the year after that to wire the schools up. Now, the problem is a lot of the schools are wired, a lot of them have computers, but the issue is that they aren't wired between the districts. So the money would then go to create the linkage or the wiring, as it were, that would link the various districts so all the schools could be broadband, talk to each other. It'd be a wonderful thing.
Well, so it's kind of a stepping stone towards the future.
And Mish Merritt used to do that, and they do it with a lot of schools. Is this just going to add on to what the Merritt Network really does?
Yeah, it's going to just sort of fill it out all over the state.
Okay.
It'd take
good
time, a couple of years, obviously.
Wow.
But we'll be broadband wired, and I can't say 100% of the schools,
no, no,
but pretty much all of them.
But it being like in rural areas on the UP, you know, a lot of places
yeah,
which right now
area
are underserved could be suddenly part of the digital generation.
Well, and the other thing it might do, too, is standardize systems that are used, like attendance systems that are used between all the systems.
Mike, thank you so much. These are just some of the headlines that are in MI Tech News, and you can get all of these headlines for free and in depth, along with a lot of the audio that you hear on our program as well. Simply go to internetadvisor.net and go down and hit the subscribe button. It's as simple as that. No money involved, and you got all this goodness coming to you. Mike, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks, guys. Play nice today.
Welcome back. It's the Internet Advisor, Foster Brown. I'm the referee here.
Big Ten fighting?
You know, the WWF of broadcasting. We have in studio, of course, a great team of tech experts. And we wanted to bring maybe the voice of reason. And so we invited Rick Broida to join us today. Hi, Rick. How you doing?
I'm here.
Reasonable.
There he is. Don't you hide on me. It's tough enough in the studio here.
I can run, but I can't hide.
Yeah. Good to have you along, Rick.
We need a referee.
Listen, we needed to have you in here today because this last week has been just an incredible, an avalanche of information about new gadgets and all sorts of new software and kind of, in some ways, it looks like some kind of revolutionary things going on, not just with Apple, but with Google as well. So that's why I thought we'd invite you to come on board. Were you able to watch the Apple event?
I did watch the Apple event. I kind of had it in the background as I was typing away.
Okay. Tell me something at the end of it. Did you feel that it was worth a major event?
Well, you know, that's a good question, and I think it kind of leads to the bigger question of whether or not Apple still really has any mojo left to be able to. What they introduced here was some very evolutionary new products.
Yeah.
Nothing even remotely revolutionary.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's just kind of the nature of the beast these days, but I was a little disappointed. I really was hoping that Apple would, at least, you know, for the iPad line especially, be able to maybe pull a rabbit out of the hat and let's, you know, come up with something that we haven't seen before. But we really didn't get that, and so I don't know if it really merited a big splashy event like that.
Well, you wonder, is it possible anymore? I mean, just kind of as an open question with the guys here, just to touch on this, is it possible really to come without really pull any rabbits out of the hat? Now, with the, for instance, with the watch, that's always interesting because you've got different form factors and ways of executing things, and they look like they've done some really clever and very interesting things with that. We'll see what that looks like in reality next year. But, I mean, with the form factor of the iPad, there are a lot of competitors out there.
But when you say rabbit out of the hat, what would be a rabbit? Give me an idea of what a rabbit would be, because I'd love to know myself.
Well, I mean, okay, so they shaved another couple millimeters off of the thickness of the iPad, which was already pretty thin. But beyond that, you know, there was just nothing other than the obligatory faster processor and, you know, the obligatory slightly better camera and so forth. And, you know, hey, it's not for me to tell Apple how to perform their tricks. I simply want something that says, hey, we're still thinking about new and cool and amazing things. And here's something you didn't expect, and yet all we got was what we expected, and which is fine. It's just not exciting.
You know, we sound like spoiled children.
But what were we going to say, Ed?
No, that's exactly what I was going to say. You know, but you got to give them every couple years. You got to give them that pull a rabbit out.
And not just Apple, but who's pulling any rabbits?
Yeah,
out?
That's exactly it. Now, wait. There's one thing though that we haven't talked about yet, Shane. By the way, if you can get a word in edgewise, feel free. Things that struck me. Now, look, we had the iPad come out. It was the iPad Air 2 and the iPad Mini 3 came out. Okay, nice form factors. There are comparable things that are out there, and these are beautiful, refined products. No questions about it. We can talk about the economics of it, where the prices are right. But one of the things that struck me was the Mac Mini came out, which was kind of interesting because that's a unique kind of a small computer. And Cal, what is the price point on that was?
It's your entry level computer, and that one comes in the game at, drum roll please,
$499.
I believe it's $499. You can get a Mac Mini at.
Okay,
they dropped it by $100.
Right.
So what are you getting with that? Just for people, you're getting basically a computer and a little brick.
You're getting a CPU in a very small form factor, with a fairly robust processor to it, and you can stick it in any spot you want. And the good thing about it is, like, let's say you're crossing over from the Great Divide from Windows to Apple,
mm-hmm.
you can take your monitor, you can take your mouse, you can take your keyboard, you can take all your peripherals, stick it on this thing, and continue
on. And stunning.
I mean, is that not new, though? I mean, they had
No. It's not new. All they did is a fourth-generation revision of a product that they already had.
Yeah,
gotcha.
And was it something spectacular and new? Not at all.
But it hadn't been updated, I don't
But
think
it hadn't been updated for a while, now, and it was just a refresh to it.
Now, there are other things that happened, like new iTunes 12. Matter of fact, that came as an update. We've got Apple's iOS 8.1 coming out on Monday. We can talk about that a little bit more. But no Apple TV. That is where I thought, finally, we're going to see something, but no Apple TV. Rick, what struck you about that?
Right, no Apple TV, and just to finish the iPad conversation, we'll circle back on, there's no bigger iPad, which was something that I was hoping for a little bit. But so the Apple TV, right, they've had the same box now, more or less, for several years, and, you know, it still kind of begs the question, like, what does Apple want from the Apple TV? It almost seems like it's the redheaded stepchild at this point. They haven't updated it in any meaningful way in quite a long time, and it's, I think they're, you know, Roku and to a lesser extent, you know, Google Chromecast are kind of eating their lunch. So, I don't know.
That surprised me the most.
The difference being is that with Roku and the Google devices, they're designed for people who are trying to avoid everything possible paying for content, where Apple is trying to be able to give to you great content. And I think once they get into a point where they can make money, of course, and control that content, they're not going to really do that much more with Apple TV.
But I'm an owner of an Apple TV, have owned it for quite a while. And one of the things that's disappointing is navigating around it. It's just horribly clumsy.
So how come you haven't gotten rid of it?
Because I got it. I mean, I haven't got money to buy anything else.
Sell it. For what you can sell your Apple TV, you can get a Chrome stick for it and go on down about your business, right?
Yes, I buy a Roku, to be honest.
Or buy a Roku, either one.
But now, also this week, and let's talk about the other side of the street for just a second, Rick. Didn't Google come out with a Google TV? Am I right this week?
Yes, so Google got into the streaming media box game with their own product. And I'm going to just pretend like I do remember what they call it.
I think it was simply called Google TV, if I'm not wrong. I was trying.
No,
to...
that's what it used to be. They used to have a product called Google TV.
That's right.
This new thing is somebody's got something there they can look it up on.
We're looking for it right now.
They're all digging it.
Okay.
At least it isn't that horrible cube or whatever that blob
right.
was. They tried to sell that one time. Oh, it was
so
disastrous.
What this is, though, is basically their answer to, I think, Amazon's Fire TV.
Yes.
So it's a $99 box, and they're offering an optional $39 game controller. So I think they're trying to do what Amazon is doing, which is to kind of bring the Google Play store and experience and apps and games and so forth to your TV, which I think is the smart move. And again, that's where I'm a little surprised that Apple is not trying to do likewise, because even though you can already use your iPhone or your iPad or whatever as kind of the controller to play games via an Apple TV box, there's no dedicated controller, game controller, which there easily could be. Mm-hmm. And you want to talk about monetizing, I mean, they'll sell a ton more apps and games that way if they were to do that. So, I agree with you, Foster. I'm surprised that Apple has not stepped up on that product. I don't know if they don't know what they want to do or if they just aren't ready to do it.
Yeah, just to put a bow on this for me, I think that the two things that struck me, and Kel, I don't know what your thoughts on it, was that the lack of the bigger iPad, a 13-inch iPad, which I thought would be really competitive, and then the other thing was that the Apple TV wasn't changed. Now, apparently, am I right, Kel, that there's rumblings that may happen next year?
Well, the 13-inch iPad will be coming next year.
That will? Okay.
The reason why it's not this year is because they want to devote all their manufacturing resources to putting out iPhone 6 and 6 Pluses because they're selling so darn good.
Yeah,
and they can't meet the demand on that. So they decided to wait.
I buy that, yeah.
Yeah, the, just so you know,
it is partially true.
The Google TV device is the Google Player, the Nexus Player. I'm sorry, Nexus
Player. Nexus Player. There you go.
They're going to launch it along with the new Nexus
and it
tablet.
Used to be called Android TV. Is that what it was?
That's right. That's exactly it. Okay. But it will be like a set-top box, right?
Yes.
No, it's actually going to be integrated within the TV.
I thought if you could also buy it aftermarket and just like a set-top box. Yeah, let's explore.
There is a the box.
Okay.
It's a slim, small, looks like a black disc.
Okay.
Very simple.
Yep. It's interesting. The TV, Rick, has kind of become the new battleground, for getting people's eyes, hasn't it?
Well, if I can get a 16-inch
TV. Oh, sure. That's TV. Still where people are spending the bulk of their time for entertainment and whatnot. And everybody's got their box now, and it's just a matter of which ecosystem you want to tie yourself to.
That's...
and which little extras you might want to have. Amazon's got their Fire TV with the voice control, which is nice, but it's not really the end all be all. And it's interesting. I mean, what I love is that you can get so much such a cool streaming capability for $100 for $75.
It is remarkable.
$50,
hey, Rick, hang on a second. We're going to have you stick around if we could, please. We'll come back on. I want to talk about this business about ecosystems because that ties in to Apple's new software coming out right now, the OS and a whole bunch of other stuff. Back in just a second with more Rick Broider here on the Internet Advisor. Welcome back to WWF. No, that's right. It's the Internet Advisor.
That would be WWT.
Foster Brown and the gang in here. We're talking about technology. This will be just a landslide of technology out there. Rick Broida is with us as well. Rick, thanks for joining us here.
Always a pleasure.
Yeah, it's good to have you on to talk gadgets. Rick is our expert. He is also known as the cheapskate, so he's keeping in mind a lot of the prices that are out there as well as we talk about these devices.
He writes a little bit for some magazine, doesn't
he? Yeah, a bunch of them, I think.
Actually, yeah, more than a few.
What's a magazine?
Yeah. Every now and then you like to revisit a pulp-based...
No, just real quick, before we move on with Rick, I know we got another subject for him, but I want to talk to you about the TV devices, the Roku. What was your preference again? Because I know you reviewed them not long ago, right?
What was my preference?
Yeah, because I'm looking for one for my wife, and I can't do Google.
Right, Christmas is coming up, right?
Yes.
Right. And yeah.
And I've got to find one, but I can't do the Google one. But
for religious reasons.
How did the others do? Yes, for
real. I think you really can't go wrong with the Roku box.
Okay.
You know, depending on, you know, there's 3-4 different models to choose from, but they're excellent. I really like them.
Okay.
You've even got one now that is a Roku stick.
That's right.
It is actually everything that the box has, and even you I have a remote with a headset on it, I think, even with that too.
Good.
So it's remarkable.
I think actually the Roku 3 is the only one that lets you plug in the headset, which is an awesome feature.
Isn't it?
But yeah.
Yeah. Matter of fact.
And that's what we have is the Roku 3. And I will tell you that my daughter, who likes everything Apple, does not like the Apple TV, and she loves the Roku 3.
Yeah. Now, is the headset Bluetooth or is it a plug-in device?
We've only used the plug-in because I don't think it is Bluetooth.
Okay,
I don't think so either. There's a plug-in. There's a little plug in the back of the.
What's interesting is if it were
remote connects to the Roku box via Bluetooth, but you actually plug a wired headset into the remote.
Oh, that's
right.
Okay,
that's right. Yeah.
So my question to you, Gary, about your daughter, is it the operating system she doesn't like about the Apple TV, or is it the content?
The Roku just works better.
Okay.
Cal, I mean, I'll tell you the same
thing. That's all she cares about.
She's
not like you or I. She just wants it to work better.
Yeah, okay. it's a very clumsy device to work with.
Okay.
Very clumsy. And I've used my daughter's Roku at her house, and it's so much easier. The search, so much easier on it. Getting to different channels, so much easier on it.
I'm going to have to go get one of these.
Roku, for good reason, they own the space.
I don't watch TV.
We could sell you a used Apple TV real cheap.
I don't watch TV, and even I might watch the Roku. Maybe not. But
one thing I got to say to you, Shane, is that, and Rick, you averted to this, is that when you get the Roku that has the remote that you can plug the headset into, my wife would appreciate that. Because I sit up late at night, like way late at night, and the noise of the TV gets into the bedroom.
Yeah.
You know? So I could plug that in and not disturb her while I binge on some, you know, thing on Netflix.
I'm interested. Rick, did you try the streaming version, the one the stick that plugs in? How did this wireless handle the... Did that go okay?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Works just great.
Okay.
Works just great. So, but actually, that's a nice option too. Even I think that $50 product versus the Roku One box, which is also $50, I think you get a better remote with the stick than you do with the box.
Oh,
so if you're looking to stick with that price point, I'd go with the stick.
Cool. Okay. Let's talk about ecosystems because you mentioned that word in the. And I think this is very important right now, and Cal in particular, interested in your comments, because not only has Apple come out this last week with new devices, but they're now coming out with Yosemite, which is OS X 10.
Yeah, 10.10.
10.10, okay.
Yes.
And that is the newest of their operating systems. You can update to it right now. I haven't done it yet. I'm usually on a bleeding edge, and I probably will.
And the price is just outstanding.
Yes. God bless them. It is. The price is incredible. Nothing. Absolutely nothing to do.
But it's 10.10. It's not a full upgrade, right? It's not going to 11.
Well,
8.1, you know, Windows 8.1 didn't cost anything either.
That's true.
And 8.2 won't cost anything.
I know there's a point in there somewhere. But what I'm thinking about this is this, that with Yosemite, and then on Monday, I understand, the 20th of October, they're going to be releasing iOS 8.1.
Correct.
For the mobile devices. When that's out, then, you're going to be able to talk all across your devices. They'll all be linked across with continuity?
That is correct.
Am I right, Rick?
I think that's what they call it.
So, in other words, you could start working on something on your laptop, then you could pick it up on your iMac, you could pick it up on your iPhone, you can pick it up on your iPad. The phone rings on your iPhone, you could pick up your iPad and answer it, essentially,
You can answer it on your Mac.
You can answer it on your Mac anywhere. So, in other words, there's the walled garden. Which is enticing you to enter into this this world where everything will kind of work seamlessly.
And that is a lovely garden.
That's exactly it. And I think that that seems to be even the more important thing than the devices that have come out right now, is that people are just kind of saying, you know, I'll just kind of settle in here.
Well, see, here's the knock to that. Well, not the knock to it, but everybody else could do the same thing. You could do the same thing on the Android devices.
Absolutely.
And that sort of thing as well. I think the difference is that with Apple, and they said it in their presentation, they build the hardware
yes.
and the software, so they have more control over the ecosystem, that sort of thing. Where with the Android devices, it's like, here's the ecosystem, everybody come on in and play, and we'll try to make it all link together. So that's the difference.
What now? I'm curious, Shane, because I know, a devotee of Windows.
Yes.
I know, Eddie, you are using the Windows 8 right now as well, and I know that you do too, Gary. Microsoft seems to be doing the opposite. They're trying to be they want to make themselves available or be able to be used by all the platforms. In other words, they've got Office now on just about every platform that's out there. In other words, they've broken down the walls. And it's like
they always have, right? They've always allowed other people to develop on their systems. Where Apple sued Franklin way back when, I thought Apple was a great company till they drove all their competitors out of business, sued them out of business, didn't drive them out with pricing, but just sued them out, right? Used the and it was their right to do that, but what it did was it made it a very small walled garden.
Mm-hmm.
And anybody that has an open platform in business, we're all using open systems today, right? Because no one has all of the all good ideas.
How much open source software are you running in your business right now? Which I doubt you are, because to a point, that stuff is very, very open.
He didn't say
and
open,
vulnerable.
He didn't say open source.
Well, what did he say open?
Open to development.
So my point is,
oh my, okay, so I stand corrected.
I'm not going to talk about this on the air.
Okay, all right, understood.
Hey, do you need some ice for that burn?
Yeah. Yeah, hey, listen. Here's the deal. Here's the deal. No. I want to ask about you, Rick, from your perspective as well, as you look at the issue of closed source. Or not closed source, but this closed garden thing with whether it's Google or Apple that are doing this versus the Microsoft thing. Which thing do you think has a better chance to exist? I mean, to continue and to be really productive in its acceptation by the public.
Well, you know what? I'll tell you what, Foster. I'm increasingly becoming like I think most people in that. I just want it to work.
There you go.
You know, I spent a good chunk of time yesterday with a couple different video editing programs within Windows. And just to accomplish the simplest things, the amount of grief I had to put up with just to make this happen was ridiculous. And it got me thinking, you know what? I don't care if it's Windows. I don't care if it's Mac. I don't care if it's iPad. I don't care what it is. I just want the tools to work. I want them to be affordably priced. And I think I'm not wrong in suggesting that everybody wants the same thing. You know, we're kind of getting that not post-racial, but post-platform world where you know, this stuff isn't. It doesn't matter. I'm a Mac. I'm a PC. I just want it to work.
Yeah, and that's a great point. I was going to say that's a great point. I read your article and your discussions, your post on Facebook about that, and you were absolutely right about the video editing software and how it's just. Why do they still have these same bugs? They've been out there for years.
That's insane.
As soon as I read it, I smiled because I knew exactly what he was talking about.
Yes.
It was so right on, Rick. It was great.
Cal, you must be just chomping at the bit now to say, but iMovie works great, right?
Well, you know, it doesn't matter anymore. It really doesn't. If you can get the job done, whatever tool that you select to use, that's the most important thing down the line there. You don't have to worry about whether it's on this platform, that platform, whatever it is. Now, what you do have to be concerned with is, can I cross platforms, because all the world doesn't work on the same platform.
Yep. Well, guys, we are certainly not going to put a bow on this conversation, but it's an interesting one. And by the way, I think all of us, regardless of what side we're coming from, would agree with you, Rick. It's just got to work, and it's got to be at the right price point. By the way, keep on looking at theinternetadvisor.net for more information about Rick Broida and the great article he has. We also post a lot of his stuff into our Facebook. Make sure you check that out as well. Rick, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Take care. Welcome back to the Internet Advisor, Foster Brown and the gang here. We're talking Oh, all sorts of technology today. I don't know if any of you have ever traveled outside the country. And one of the things that is terribly frustrating is that you're immediately in this terrible place where everything costs a fortune. You got to be very careful about what you're calling, who you're calling, how you're using data, etc. Well, the folks at AT&T have stepped up with something very special called AT&T Passport. It was just announced this week, and we have Melissa Bahura with us. She's the Area Retail Sales Manager for AT&T here in Michigan. Melissa, thank you so much for taking time to be with us on the Internet Advisor.
Thanks so much for having me.
Hey, Melissa, let's talk about AT&T Passport. What is it, and how does it make traveling with my AT&T phone easier overseas?
Yeah, so absolutely. So on October 10th, we actually launched our new AT&T Passport, which is our best value just, you know, yet for international travel. Okay. It's perfect for keeping in touch with work, family, and friends while traveling abroad. To me, the great thing about the new plan is that you can sign up just for the month that you're going to be traveling.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so it's a one-time charge that it will automatically expire after 30 days for people that aren't traveling, you know, so often.
Right.
It's just a great solution for them.
So I'm going to see my sister in Vancouver Island in Canada, and what would I pay for 1 month?
Yeah, so we have packages starting as low as $30.
Okay.
All of our packages, though, are going to include unlimited messaging, including your text messages, your pictures, your video messages.
Okay.
All are going to include international Wi-Fi. And then just depending on how much cellular data you're going to be using, as well as how much you're going to be talking, would be where we would determine which plan would be the right for, you know, you or any of our other customers.
So, Melissa, you know, you've had other programs, and you could do this. This isn't really revolutionary. It's more evolutionary, right? Isn't the price of kind of international calling coming down?
Yeah, so absolutely. So before in the past, it was you would sign up for a recurring plan. This was ideal for our business customers that were traveling international month after month. The great thing about the new plan is, you know, a lot of our just consumer travelers are only going to be gone, you know, just for a month, maybe
right.
a couple of
right.
weeks.
Right.
So this is a great way to not get, you know, locked into a monthly recurring plan, but allow you to have a plan just for the time that you're traveling.
Kel?
So I used to take get locked into that recurring plan and cancel it after a week when I got back.
Yep, so the great thing about the new plan is it's going to automatically cancel it after just the 30 days. And then, of course, if you're traveling again, you can always add it again, remove it down the road.
Mm-hmm.
But like you said, exactly, you're not going to be locked in, which just makes it, you know,
now,
super
Gary,
ideal.
You've done a lot of international travel, and you've done it with AT&T. As you look at this, how does it look?
I mean, it looks great, right? I mean, prices are better. They've ever been.
Okay.
You always had to do kind of that workaround before. I would sign up for it, but then I would just cancel it when I came back.
Yeah, right? Now you don't have to
now
worry about
that.
It'll automatically
cancel. So it's a better program. It's a better feature. And certainly prices are coming down.
Cal?
If I'm not carrying an AT&T phone, let's say I just have a MiFi or a hotspot, is this applicable for that as well?
Absolutely. So we came out with two great plans. One's for our smartphone users, and then we also have an additional plan for data-only users. So if you just want to take your laptop with you, if you just want to take a tablet with you instead, just for, you know, some of your emails, internet browsing and whatnot, it's going to give you the capability to do that too.
And would that be the same pricing?
Yep, so the pricing will still start at $30.
Mm-hmm.
If you're just using it for data, we're going to give you additional data allotments to use along with it. But for somebody that does want to be able to keep in touch with, you know, messaging, data usage, voice calling, Wi-Fi, we have the all-inclusive packages or the data-only ones.
Now, we should say for folks who are going, I'm just trying to think of how this would have worked on my trip.
Yeah.
Essentially, I got all the messages I want to do with a Columbia video messages, et cetera. And Wi-Fi use looks like it's all you can eat as well, right?
Yeah, so the Wi-Fi, the great thing, too, is once you have the Passport app, it'll actually help you locate areas where you do have Wi-Fi.
Okay.
So, of course, like with some of these plans, we don't recommend doing a ton of streaming data and whatnot. So what it'll do is it'll alert you if you're in an AT&T Wi-Fi hotspot. That way, you can use it, you know, as much as you want on the Wi-Fi. And then, of course, if you're in an area that doesn't have Wi-Fi, you can certainly still connect with the great new affordable rates that are included with us.
But we're talking with Melissa Bahura, who is the area retail sales manager for AT&T.
One of the types of travel that I do is just up into Canada, up in the North Channel to go sailing every year. Mm-hmm. And we roam up there, and we roam to Rogers. So is this going to cover, you know, not only AT&T, but your partners as well?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's going to give you the broadest international voice coverage over any U.S. carrier.
That's a big question, Gary, because when I was out of Vancouver, and Canada is rather, there's not very many providers. Right. There was a few control the whole thing. Like Rogers is a big one.
Right.
And there's another one in Canada. I forget what it is. So you partner with them so we could use those Wi-Fi services without incurring extra cost, right?
Yeah.
Their cell coverage as well is what I heard.
I got you. Okay.
Yeah. Yep. So it's going to be the largest, AT&T offers you the largest, the broadest international voice coverage and data coverage, which we're super excited about. We're actually the first and only U.S. carrier to launch international LTE roaming abroad as well.
Melissa, with all due respect, I'm traveling with a bunch of kids, and they love to do a lot of streaming. Do you throttle at any given time?
Yeah, so what I would recommend for that is when they are going to be doing things like streaming, just because, you know, sometimes the data allowances, are going to give you great amounts. Like, we go up to 800 megabytes. But if you're going to be streaming a ton of stuff, especially with the kids, like you pointed out, that's where the Wi-Fi locator is going to be ideal. So you're going to encourage the kids to use that part of the service while they're on the Wi-Fi.
Or pay the difference. Yeah, folks, you should, with the cap on this thing, the biggest, and this is the most expensive package, is 800 megabytes. Am I right? That's the big one.
Yep. The biggest one is going to be the 800 megabytes, and that's going to be for your cellular phone. We do, though, for customers that are using data only, which are like our business travelers using a laptop or a tablet, they can do the 800 megabytes.
Okay. So, I mean, folks, you're not going to be out there, in other words, willy-nilly gobbling up a lot of data through cellular. You have to use it wisely. And it sounds like the trick, and Gary, you've traveled, to look for Wi-Fi.
That's right.
And make sure you're making your calls over Wi-Fi with VoIP, or you're doing your streaming over Wi-Fi, and just stay off the cellular network unless you absolutely have to, and there's no way around it.
And there's some great tools, too, where you can actually turn off. Like what I did on my recent travels was I would turn off my international data if I felt like I was nearing my full usage amount.
Oh, yeah.
And then, obviously, if you wanted to be able to, check and get your internet access and whatnot, go ahead and turn it on. And then we do have great ways to track it while you're overseas, because we certainly don't want you to get, a huge bill down the road not realizing what you're using. So using our apps, you can also track and monitor, and it'll alert you if you're getting close.
It's important. Ed was talking about working with somebody recently who went overseas for the company for the first time and came back from China with a $2,000 bill.
Yeah, no, we don't want that to happen. That's why I'm so glad you guys were getting the word out today.
Just
right before you go, sign up for one of our packages, like I said, as low as $30 a month.
Yep.
That way you don't have any surprise bills.
Absolutely. Melissa, thank you so much. Melissa Bahura is with AT&T. She's the Area Retail Sales Manager. Thank you so much for letting us know about the AT&T Passport. By the way, folks, we'll have a link on our homepage at internetadvisor.net for more information about that. Thanks again, Melissa.
Thank you, guys. Have a great day.
All right, take care. Bye-bye. Folks, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back after the news at the top of the hour, or whatever happens to be the break that you are going to experience, we'll be back with another hour of the Internet Advisor, and that's when the guys are going to sink their teeth into some of the problems that you've presented us through your email. By the way, if you'd like to get a question to us, a great way to do that is simply go to internetadvisor.net, hit the Contact Us button on the top right-hand corner, and then fill in the blank with your name and your email address and the basic problem you're having. And we'll do our very best to get back to you as quick as we can to help solve that. We're going to get some of those with us here on the air in this coming hour.
You're listening to a podcast of the Internet Advisor. To see the show notes for this program, visit our homepage at www.internetadvisor.net. That's where you'll also find past podcasts, our toolkit full of free software to clean up your computer and keep it running strong, plus other resources. If you have a question for our hosts, just click the contact form on the homepage and send us an email with the details. Don't forget to look for us on Facebook. Now, let's get back to the second hour of the Internet Advisor. Welcome to hour number two of the Internet Advisor. Foster Brown here, along with Gary Baker, Ed Riddell, Cal Carson, Shane Hammond. We are loaded from here, and here we got lots of questions people have asked during the week we're going to be answering. We've also got some things that they've been dealing with in their various realms that we're going to be talking about, problems they've been solving, hopefully ones maybe that you've been dealing with as well. And I'll be talking about Windows 10 preview that I've been working with on a Surface Pro 2. Coming up next. Well, I think, for my money, this is kind of my favorite part of the program because we get to help you with problems that you're having. Oh, by the way, how do we find out about what those problems are? Simply, when you go to internetadvisor.net and you click on the Contact Us button and you put down your concerns and send it to us. All week long, we're answering those questions, and we pull some of them together here on Saturdays when we record our program for you folks who are listening to us on our affiliate stations and those of you who listen to us on the podcast as well.
Right, and for the people that when I do my speech to text, forgive the grammar if it's incorrect. Foster, you and I were talking about this a few weeks ago, how of the voice recognition's words that can be quite embarrassing.
We can make a. You can make a.
So I'm not
book
making.
Up.
I'm not making a pass at you. I'm not trying to insult you. Think of it. Just think of what trying to word I was trying to say.
That's exactly it. Don't you love spell check?
You know, this now explains a lot. Ed and I both worked at the same place, yeah. And during our lunch hours, I normally hear him over there babbling incessantly. And he's not talking on the phone because I notice his phone's not lit or anything, but he's just talking, and now I understand completely.
I am using that function. I know, and any of the rest of you doing that? Gary, I know you do a lot of, you know, email and texting and things like that. Do you use the voice to dictate your messages?
Only when I'm driving.
Oh, okay. Yes, I use it.
Right, because you
sure,
know,
obviously, yeah.
They don't want you to text while you're driving, but if you're talking, I can just... Yep. Look straight ahead, talk,
exactly.
And...
That's the most dangerous place, though, because you can't spell check it, can you?
No, it's tough. And so I only do that when I'm doing this with somebody who will understand.
That's exactly.
And in fact, I actually have gotten responses back that said, and you know, you listen to it, because you can listen to text now, right?
Oh, that's right, yes,
so
you can.
So I listen to it and says, you're obviously not paying attention. And then I, you know, when I stop, then I do look and I went, I can't believe I sent that.
You know, isn't it, I think I'm right, Cal, that and with iOS 8.0, this is before the update comes, that you can actually send an audio file, not just dictate text to a message, but you can actually send an audio file.
You're correct, old wise one.
So you would avoid the problem entirely that way. And I think it might be safer.
And that probably would be safer.
Unless you're sending an audio file that's been enhanced with alcohol. Or something like that.
That's never been my problem while driving. So.
Thank God for that.
And it's just an illusion that it's enhanced.
That's right.
But if he's sitting in the back seat of a limousine and he's got a big bottle of bubbly in him and the Mrs. are out enjoying a good time, maybe he shouldn't send an audio test.
And that's never happened to me either.
So, Shane, how about you? Do you use it?
I actually have really good luck with my Windows Phone Cortana. She does a great job translating my text for me.
Oh, that's interesting.
She'll read it back, and then before she reads it back, she sends it. I mean...
Oh, wait a minute. You know, so it reads it back?
Yeah.
That is a neat function. So tell me, how does that work when you're sending a message?
You just bring her up, you know, Cortana, and you say, you know, send message or type message, email to, and then you name who, and it'll say, is this who you were thinking?
Okay.
And you say, and it sends off just like you would think it would. I've had bad luck with a lot of these before with the voice recognition.
Right.
And I'm finding that this one's working really well.
So then really what you do... Go ahead.
I really don't want to put you on the spot. Do you have her with you right now?
I do not. My phone is out of order. I have my phone with me, but I can't see my screen. I broke my screen.
Oh.
Cortana's on vacation, folks.
Well, actually, you could speak to Cortana, but
it's so hard with such a visual phone with a Windows phone.
Oh, absolutely.
So visually.
He's just heartbroken. He can't believe he actually broke his own screen. Oh. He's usually repairing other people's computers.
I know.
It's just, why did I do that?
And it's totally the first time that's ever happened to me, ever.
Oh,
but, you know, I'm looking at the whole screen digitizer screen assembly on eBay. It's $20.
Yeah.
So,
it's cheap.
Are you thinking of doing your own repair?
Well, I'm waiting for the new HTC
okay.
M8 to come out for Windows for T-Mobile.
Ladies and gentlemen, let's just make this clear. He did what we call a gravity upgrade.
So I'm waiting for that, and I decided I can't wait anymore, so I'm going to have to repair it.
But I want to get back to the Cortana, because this is important.
She's by far, you know, they've done a lot of comparisons lately.
Yes.
You know, with Siri, Cortana, and Google. And Cortana seems to be coming out ahead.
I've been noticing that as well. While the operating system, certainly the Windows system, in comparison to the other ones, is like a 3% maybe, it is still a very good system. And I think one of the ways that it's proving itself is with Cortana. Mm-hmm. And what I find interesting is that you dictate the message. Then it reads it back to you mm-hmm. to make sure it's got it right before it sends it. That's brilliant.
And you know something? See, and this is not a knock. Don't get this wrong. It should do that.
Yes.
Because everybody who comes out subsequent to the other person with these different systems should be making them better.
Absolutely.
And Microsoft has definitely made an improvement upon that from Siri. And
yeah,
my hands off to that.
Yeah, and I you're exactly right. And I think that is the good point that that's the value of competition, of not one reigning over all. And I think that is definitely the value mm-hmm. that Cortana brings to this kind of thing. Anything happened in the shop this week that you'd like to share, some things that you've worked on?
You know, I've seen a lot that I don't know why. It's maybe the time of the year, but I've seen a lot of blown motherboards this last few weeks.
Wow.
Capacitors blowing.
You know, I've had several of those, too, in the last few months. And, you know, I'm not sure why that is.
I can tell you why.
What is it?
Okay, we're starting the heating season. There's a lot of people who don't have proper voltage protection on their computers. And then when your furnace kicks on, which sucks more amps than anything else in the house next to the refrigerator, it browns out the rest of the circuit that computer may be on, henceforth, dead motherboard.
No. Could be.
Yeah, no, I don't agree. I think it's just cheap components. The manufacturers are looking at cutting costs and making as much money as they can, but I think they just pushed it too far. They're using cheaper components, and that's what we're running into.
And one way to avoid any of that kind of stuff, I mean, to prolong that from happening, and I've been telling people this all the time, you've got to treat your computer almost like your car. You just can't let it go without maintenance. I mean, you've got to do certain things to a computer and a laptop. Like my laptop and desktop, I have those blown out, dusted out, cleaned at least every 6 months.
Yeah.
You know, and don't use the can air. The can air's no good. It leaves moisture behind.
Yeah, okay.
It's not as strong enough as you'd like to really clean a machine.
So what do you use to?
I've got a nice little air compressor, you know, I bought from Home Depot. It was $30, $40, nothing expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And you give it a couple quick shots at 100 PSI and you're good.
Let's say, when we come back from the break, I want to ask you guys maybe about some of the seasonal maintenance things. And Cal, you brought that up, and I think it's a good idea, too. Now, Gary, we've been around for a long time, and when there was just the desktops we were talking about, it was really important because you had them on the floor very often, at the back of the cabinet, with fur balls all over the floor.
Did they use electricity back then?
I dealt with the gerbils. Gerbils. Lots of gerbils. Back in just a moment. Welcome back. It's the Internet Advisor, and we have got a whole bunch of distinguished gentle people here in the studio with us, Gary and Ed, Cal and Shane, and myself, Foster Brown. And we're going to be talking in just a moment with one of our folks out there who posed a question for us this week, and we'll be getting to their question in just a minute. Guys, before we do that, I quickly want to step back into something that we started talking about that I thought is probably a good one. And that is regular cleaning. And Gary, I know in more than 16 years we've been doing this, we've talked about this regularly and should do that, as a matter of fact. Shane, what you were saying before, it's simple, but there is some practical maintenance you can do.
Well, either that or just, you know, pass it along to your kids by
a new one. And, you know, by the way, that is kind of the mentality. They're so disposable, you know, that you do that. But even then, you want to... I don't have the $400 or $500, generally speaking.
My kids want the latest and greatest.
That's exactly.
I get them something nice, and then they pass it along
to me.
You're
getting the hand-me-down.
When did that happen?
So what are some of the basic things, guys, that we should do? Let's say right now we're into the fall, and if you want to, like, we'll do the cleaning now and then in spring cleaning. So let's make that kind of the bookends on doing the cleaning every 6 months, roughly. What would you guys, let's go around the room, and maybe Ed, start with you. What would you do for cleaning?
Well, I mean, if it was just a desktop or a laptop, I would just use my compressor just to blow it out through the vents. You do not want to blow the air in there so fast that you actually hear it spinning and making that whirling noise, because you'll burn out the... We've all done it. You'll burn out the bearings in the fan. It's not meant to do that. Yeah. It heats it up too much.
Okay.
And then you'll be taking to someone like Shane to get the fan.
So go right ahead and blow those. No, I'm just joking. Yeah.
You know, and you know what else I've done? Sometimes on laptops, I also remove any cover that's on the bottom of it.
Uh-huh.
You know, like the memory and the disk drive covers. I don't remove the disk drives and this stuff, but I'll also pull those out and blow it out, because usually I can remove dust from areas that, you know, it circulates the air differently in there, and I like dust. I like blowing dust out of laptops. So, and then I get dust where, you know, you didn't know there was dust. And when you remove all those covers in the bottom.
It's very satisfying, isn't it?
Isn't it? Yeah.
When you see the big cloud of smoke.
Ooh, I got it!
And then you start sneezing and coughing.
Oh, we're such dorks.
Cal, how about you?
Well, you know, when it comes to cleaning in English. When it comes to cleaning a desktop, I do what both these guys do, but I do a variation on it. For example, after you pull the power plug on it and you open up the case on the inside, take your finger, put it on the fan and hold it in place, then take the can of compressed air and blow the dust off of it. That way you don't spin the living craziness out of it, but yet at the same time you can clean it off at the same time. For laptops, if you're not the type of person like Ed that you can tear a laptop apart and get on the inside, a toothbrush to the vents, take it and then blow it off.
That's a good one.
It's pretty good for, because most of the dust will collect at that point and then pass into the machine. But you can reduce some of it on there if you don't have the time to take it out of the machine.
And when you're done with the toothbrush, you put it back in your wife's holder.
Oh, geez.
Yeah, but remember, wet the toothbrush. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, you are just vile.
I can't wait to meet her one day. No. She goes like, why is this toothpaste so gritty?
Pumice, I think it is.
The other thing that you want to do, too, is some preventative stuff to do. And my daughter is, like, notorious for this. Using the laptop in bed. If you're going to use it in bed, get yourself a small bed table.
Yes.
You sit it on the bed table. That way the air can circulate through it, and it doesn't have that big old fuzzy comforter to suck all the dust on the inside if it's laying directly
and
on
also
top of
build
it.
The heat up as you have it sitting there. Yeah.
Could have sprayed out and all the pink fuzzies.
You know, and that's a good point. My daughter, we would take the paper plate holders, the plastic ones that you, or even the wicker ones, and she still uses those today. When she's on her bed, she uses a paper plate holder and sets it on top.
That's really cool and cool. Anything else, Shane, from your point of view?
Yeah, you know what? I love cleaning laptops. I get a thrill out of taking someone when they hand me their machine, and I may just be cleaning a virus off it, but if I've got it on my desk, I get a toothbrush out, I clean it out. I'm very picky about giving them back a dirty machine. I hate it. It drives me nuts.
It's unprofessional, too.
And the keyboard, too.
And I'll get my toothbrush out, and I'll do the keyboard really well. But my favorite thing is, create your own home solution to have for your miracle solution for your computer, your laptop. Do distilled water, rubbing alcohol, and a nice microfiber cloth.
Oh, okay.
About a third alcohol, rubbing alcohol, two-thirds distilled water in a spray bottle, in a nice microfiber cloth. You can clean the whole machine with that.
And I think you're going to say spray the liquid onto the cloth and then wipe it, as opposed to spraying it on the machine.
You don't want to soak it too well.
Yeah. That's a very good point. Keep it fresh if you have the keyboard in particular. You don't want that getting in.
Or what people could just do is buy a Surface. And you don't have to clean them at all,
you know,
right? Except the screen.
For some reason,
they always have fingerprints all over.
I have my big.
Go that route. Get an iPad.
Get an iPad. Yeah. I have both. I like both.
You dual Surface guy.
Right here, they're both in front of me.
I have my big fat Greek wedding in my mind right now, and how I get Windex, and you know, and it's good for screens, and keyboards, and my elbow.
This show
too.
Is going downhill.
I've cleaned my ears with the solution before.
Holy guys,
Gary, this show has been in the valley for a long time.
Good point.
This is the honey. I love it. I'm so glad I'm back for this. One quick question, then we have a listener we want to get to. The quick question I have is, I've heard that you can get static buildup as well on laptops.
Correct.
And somebody just recently said that there's a trick to discharging that's pretty simple. And tell me for a moment, this, you pull the battery out?
You're going to give away all, I told you this before, you're going to give away all my free pizza tricks. Oh. You know, when a customer walks in and they're like, my machine won't boot anymore and I think it's broke. Yeah. And I'll pull the battery out, I'll unplug it, I'll hold down the power cycle, I'll cycle power cycle for about 10 seconds. Then I'll put the battery back in and it works and they're amazed that I've resurrected their laptop when they thought they were going to go buy a new one and it was just static buildup. Your board and all electronics will hold, and the capacitors and so out through the electric board will hold electricity.
Yeah.
And you want to dissipate that. You want to hold it down and let it discharge.
And it's a very simple, kind of thing.
Right. And comes right back up.
That's right. You'll still get the pizza.
And that's another reason why to clean it is the dust on there can also increases the static, not in the capacitors, but on the circuit, on the board itself, on the surface of the board itself. So cleaning out the dust is good.
And
for
that's
that
the motherboard's too. Burning out then as part of that thing.
And
okay,
once you do it, it's working perfectly.
All right, guys, we have somebody with us on the line here right now who sent us an email. It's Patricia. Patricia, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you.
Delighted to have you with us. You were on, and you sent a letter to us, an email to us. She said, I began noticing Google was behaving oddly in a browser bar. You weren't reading Google, but instead Conduit. And you visited the control panel, and you were unable to delete Google. And she says, help, what can you do about this? And as far as I know, let's see, you have a Dell, right?
That's right.
Okay, and how old is that machine?
Probably 2 years.
Okay, it's a laptop?
A desktop.
The
all-in-one.
Oh, the all-in-one, okay.
And all of that, none of that matters.
Because
Conduit Search is malware.
Yes,
right? It's
yes.
a browser hijacker program. Will Malwarebytes take care of this, you think?
You know, I would think, what browser are you using? What web browser do you typically use? Either Google Chrome, Mozilla, or Internet Explorer?
Internet Explorer with MSN, but you know, I did download Malwarebytes, and I did a scan, and it shows that it's clean.
Yeah. Okay, so but you still have that conduit, right?
Shane, what do you recommend?
Well, I mean, she's probably cleaning it and scanning it in normal mode, not in safe mode.
Okay.
You always want to run your computer in a diagnostic mode when you're doing any kind of cleaning. And in order to get to that safe mode, you're just going to tap the F8 key multiple times when you restart it. And that'll get you to the safe mode that you need to be.
Right.
So, and actually, I went to malwaretips.com to their blog section, and there's a step-by-step removal process. So right. five steps and you can get
Pat,
it removed.
Hang on a second. We're going to put you on hold for just a minute. We're going to come back and go through a little bit of that for the folks who are listening out there who want to know a little bit more about how to get rid of this. So just hang on for a moment and we'll be right back with you here on the Internet Advisor, solving your kind of problem. Welcome to the Internet Advisor. I want to thank the folks behind the glass, of course. Annie Nichols, our lady of the phones. The sweet voice that you hear when you call them. Rich, listen, thank you, Rich. Good to have you here. Glad to hear you here in one piece.
Should we nickname him Crash Lizard?
Oh, dear. Well, hey, I'm delighted to be back after my vacation, and also it's been kind of a rough week, but it already feels better being back here with this this mud wrestling.
And believe it or not, we like having you back.
Well, in fact, everybody I saw online, all the email going back and forth when you were getting a couple more pints of blood.
Yes.
And I thought Ed was right on. You know, he started all of this when he said, you know, just get it from somebody, you know, 24-year-old marathon runner or something. Yeah. And then it degraded from there.
I know. It went down right downhill. He said, I'll know I have gotten it from a much younger person if I end up with acne at the end of the day. Actually, I think
that was Cal's comment.
That was it. But anyway, I was very thankful for that, and I do feel much better now. Certainly have enough energy for the program today. All right, we're talking with Patricia, who's with us on the phone. She sent us an email about something nasty coming up in her browser, continually called Conduit. And, Pat, thanks so much for being here with us. Glad you joined us on the program.
You're welcome. Thank you for letting me.
I'm delighted you. By the way, I'm just curious, how did you find out about how to get your question here?
You know, when I lived downstate, mm-hmm. I used to always listen to your show every Saturday.
There you go.
And a few times I called in, and you were very helpful. So I we live in Traverse City now, mm-hmm. and when I went on your website, I just decided I would give you send an email and ask,
good.
Begging for help.
There you know? You go. Well, see, folks, that's what we want you to hear out there. No matter where you live, Traverse City, you could be up in the Upper Peninsula tip or down in Toledo or anywhere else you happen to listen to us, simply go to internetadvisor.net. And then go to the Contact Us button, and you can send your problem to us, and we'll do our very best to solve it, like with Pat. Now, Pat.
And we'll even take calls from
yes.
Columbus.
Yeah.
So, just, we will.
Is it safe to make an exchange and hope that we get some cherry jam?
There you go.
Yeah. I'm known as the cheesecake goddess up here.
I think I've seen that shop.
Do you actually have a website?
No.
Okay. She just makes really dynamite cherry cheesecake.
Shane, can you explain what you were talking about, how to get in the safe mode and scan?
If I could talk, my mouth was watering.
Oh, dear.
Thinking about the cheesecake there.
You got all choked up.
Yeah, I did. The method I'm explaining is a little trickier than most. I know you'll have an easy one for her as well.
But the best way, folks, is to be able to deal with the viruses without other programs running.
Correct. When I say safe mode, it's the Windows diagnostic mode. It shuts everything off, but the bare minimum to run.
So walk her through it.
And you'll be able to listen back as many times as you want until you get it right. You're just going to turn your computer on. The second you turn it on, just start tapping the F8 key. The F8 key about every second. It'll come up with a couple options on your screen. I think the second one down is Windows safe mode with networking support.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to select that when you want networking support, because you want to be able to update your antivirus programs, your malware programs.
Mm-hmm.
And I think on this particular one, Pat, that we have a specific solution, but your solution really works with everybody, right?
Yeah.
With any kind of cleaning
or any kind of diagnostic, you always want to run it in that Windows right. safe mode. But then any of the programs you're going to run it in the safe mode. That's going to give you a better, thorough cleaning. That's a little bit more advanced for most people. But once you've done it once, you've learned it, you're good.
Yeah. And that's a great point, because I've run Malwarebytes before, and I've wondered, you know, why isn't this removing it? And I haven't made that connection, mm-hmm. because although I have run Malwarebytes in safe mode, it seems to remove most everything in normal mode. But you're right. I should have thought of, let's try it in safe mode.
Can I add one more thing, guys, and tell me if you think I'm right on this? If you could, if you have a cleaner, like CCleaner or one of those, or Glare Utilities, run that first to get the junk off so that you're not scanning, it makes the scan more efficient.
Everyone has a method.
Sure.
Attack a virus, there are a few things I do. I'll go through and delete all temporary files.
Yeah.
Through the user and Windows.
Right, and that's why I'm using CCleaner for it.
I'll do that first, and then I will actually run CCleaner.
See what you're saying.
Then I'll go to add and remove programs and remove the conduit and remove all those little, they will install things. I'll get rid of those,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
then I'll run CCleaner once more. Then I go in and attack the virus.
As you say, everybody's kind of got their own formula. Yes. The only reason I brought it up, and I see that you do it, is that it means that you have less to go through when you're scanning. If that makes a difference to you. Yeah. But that's just my little
routine. And most of the time, it makes so little difference.
Yeah, that's what just happened.
It's a very small.
So, Pat, what we've been talking about now is the value of safe mode, being in safe mode. Pat, you know, understand how to get to safe mode? Patricia, can you hear me?
Yeah, you know, I may not have. I'm cutting out on you. I'm so sorry.
That's okay.
No, don't worry about that. Do you understand how to get into safe mode?
I do.
Okay, good. Okay. Well, we don't need to explain it anymore. We just wanted to make sure that you understood.
And the second thing is a point that both Gary and Cal brought up, is that if you go to the Google search engine, if you can get to Google search, try using Bing.
That's right.
But basically, how to remove conduit search and toolbar. And there's basically a set of instructions in there of how to remove your default web page because it's been manipulated, how to remove the add-on because there's been an extension added to Internet Explorer. And it provides a 5 or a 7-step
process on how to manually remove it if Malwarebytes continues to fail.
With groovy pictures, too.
With screenshots. And, you know, I'll try to send you that link since I have your email.
And we'll post it. And we'll post it on our homepage at internetadvisor.net. Now, Cal, I understand that in addition to that, there's actually, for those of us who don't want to go through all steps, there's a simple piece of hardware, software.
On that same web page, if you scroll down before they show you how to do it manually, they actually have a little fix-it button down there that you can click on, and it will load itself onto your machine and clean it up for you automatically as well. So you got two ways to go.
Which website, please?
And I will send you that link to that website. But it was, what was it?
It's at Tech Support. All, yeah. And that's all one word, techsupportall.com.
Be careful.
Yeah.
I would, because there's so many with tech support, so many ways that can go wrong with with typing that, you know, wait for the link. We'll send you the proper link or go to the website and grab it from us there because there's so, I can just imagine so many ways that can go wrong with typing something like that.
And I was also going to say is I'm not familiar with the site, and it does look like a Microsoft Fix-It button. Although they're providing excellent instructions on how to remove this conduit, I would be afraid that they may be installing their own adware that's going to have someone call you from India or China asking you to pay $180 to remove this virus. But I'm not sure about that because we haven't tested it.
Now, folks, I'm going to just step back for a second.
So common sense, we're just trying to...
Let me just give a little perspective on the conversation that's going on here for those of you who are listening. What can sometimes seem like a simple solution, like, for instance, what Cal said, just put this one little fix-it button here. If I click on it, it'll take care of all these other steps for me. As Ed has said, sometimes can lead you into a whole bunch of adware, and then suddenly you're getting called from somebody from India, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. So just keep that in mind when you go for what looks like the simplest solution, whereas we're talking about getting yourself into safe mode and then using a proven product like a Malwarebytes sometimes could be much safer and as effective as doing something like that. So I just wanted to give a little perspective on that. Okay, Pat?
Do it manually.
Yeah.
Thank you so
much. Doing it manually is probably safer. Hey, Pat, go back to your cheesecakes because we want a little taste of it ourselves.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for being with us. Take care now. That's Pat from up in Traverse City.
That was an interesting call.
That was. And I think it led us to talking about a lot of other stuff that is really important as well. Ed, another one came through this week, and it has to do with browsers again. I think you dealt with this one from Ken. He said, I can't open individual emails. I can open my email account, but not the individual emails. I'm using Mozilla. Everything works fine with Internet Explorer. I ran an antivirus software, also spyware and adware. Do I have a virus?
And I forgot what I responded. Let's ask Kel or Shane how he would deal with this. Because I'd have to recreate my troubleshooting steps on what I would do. Or Kel, maybe.
I'm sorry.
Toss up, guys.
My focus was off. What was the question again?
No.
Here's the basically. He can get into his email account, general, but not individual emails, using Mozilla. Mm-hmm. However,
okay, I remember
everything
what I said.
Works fine. Everything works fine with Internet Explorer, and he's run all sorts of antivirus stuff. What's the deal? Is it Mozilla, the problem with the browser?
Well, the first thing I thought of when I responded to this was pop-ups. Mm. It's quite possible that pop-ups are turned off, and either you could do that in Mozilla, or he has a toolbar within Mozilla, that like a Yahoo toolbar, which also provides a pop-up blocker. That's the first thing I thought of. So check your pop-up blockers within Mozilla.
Yeah, you know what else I was thinking? How about just like you do Explorer, just reset your Mozilla.
Yep.
And see if that helps as well.
Yep. Perfect.
I want to talk about Mozilla when we come back, because it seems that people are having more problems with Mozilla in particular recently. They've done some pop-ups. They've done some things behind the scenes with the browser, and I'm wondering if that's causing more problems than helping. We'll be back in just a minute to answer some more of the questions that we've received from you folks on the Internet Advisor, helping you get on the Internet and get around it. By the way, you can get hold of us by going to internetadvisor.net and finding the answers to the problems that we have tackled today on our homepage, internetadvisor.net, and listen to our podcast as well to hear the conversations in order to get those answers for yourself as well. Back in just a moment to wrap things up in our last segment. Well, it's been a ball being here with the whole gang in studio. Not often we get to have everybody here, and it has been a lot of fun. Gary Baker, thank you so much for being in studio, as always.
My pleasure.
And Mr. Ed Riddell, thank you, Eddie, for coming in.
This is what I live for on the weekends.
Gail Carson, glad to have you here off the ice.
For a short period of time.
And Shane Hamblin, always good to be able to have you here in studio.
You're welcome.
Guys, we were talking about Firefox as a browser and some problems that are happening with that.
I was going to make a comment. And third thing, I didn't memorize what I replied to the user that was having difficulties reading his email. With Internet Explorer worked fine. Mozilla, it wasn't. And the first thing I said was pop-up blocker. Shane said reset your default settings. You have that option in Mozilla. And the third thing I thought of was reload Java, or go on the Java or website and reload a Java that may have become damaged, because so many of the email packages now require Java. And okay. That was the third item.
Cal, before we go on to anything else, something we had talked about before here on the program was that there have been some improvements, some changes in Siri. With the current Mavericks, which is OS X, no, we're talking about Apple, the operating system, OS X.
10.9.5,
right. And there's a new one out, by the way, now called Yosemite, which is 10.10. We won't talk about that right now, but with the current one, you can actually dictate to it. You can talk to Siri on your laptop, right?
No, this is not Siri on the laptop. What we're doing is within the actual OS X operating system, it has a function called dictation, and it is system-wide. Okay. So when you turn it on, dictation on in the system preferences, then any application that will use that dictation, Microsoft Word, Outlook,
okay,
all those different ones that handle text,
thank you,
Keynote and that sort of thing, they will actually, you can turn on the dictation mode in it, and it will start to write on the text on the screen in that mode for you.
And that is really
handy. And there's nothing more embarrassing than reading what you have said and find out how poor your spoken syntax is.
You mean grammatically incorrect?
Oh, man. Yes, that's exactly what I mean.
So that is currently in Mavericks, but you have to go into preferences.
Yeah, would go on your desktop, you click on the dock, you click on system preferences, and then you'll see an icon in there that says dictation.
Right.
And then when you pick it, it will download from Apple's site a plugin that will allow you to use enhanced dictation if you check it, so that it will work when you're offline as well as online.
Because that's key. That's
the previous version before, you had to be connected online. It was actually sending the text back to Apple.
Well, that's what I thought Siri was all about, is sending it back to the servers. But
that's an iOS, though, and that's different.
So you now can do it offline. Is that going on in Microsoft right now?
Yeah. I mean, you go into the handicap
accessibility.
And you turn it on, and boom.
On our Surface Pro right now?
Yeah, of course.
Oh, no kidding.
Any Windows operating system.
But it's more, it's very, this is what it is. It's file, open, new, it's
not natural language necessarily.
You've got to tell it what you want.
Exactly.
Start.
This isn't Cortana.
No.
Okay.
No. You say file, it initiates the files directory. Okay. You say open, so forth.
Yeah, it's the commands.
Yeah, it's like commands.
It replaces your mouse movements and stuff.
We're talking two different things here.
Yeah.
Yes.
He's talking about commanding the machine.
Yes, yes.
And I'm talking about just using dictation.
You're
talking
about
within the application. Yeah.
Dragon Naturally Speaking replacement.
Yeah, yeah. And what's going to happen, I think, in the future then with Windows 10, and we were just looking at this in the break, Gary, is that Cortana, the whole natural language thing, is coming to Windows 10.
That's what they say.
Yeah. Now, I am running
sure
Windows
who
10
they
right
now.
I'm running Windows 10 right now.
This is really bad because everything that we're saying is showing up on his screen, and it's pretty darn accurate. So,
that is interesting.
You know, I'm going to have to make him so that he can actually publish this on the Internet Advisor.
A transcript of our show. Oh, wait a minute. Turn it on during the breaks.
Oh, no. Okay, forget I said that. I don't want to go down that path.
We could be held liable for all that.
That would be file, close. Do you want to save this file? No.
Well, it's interesting how more and more. See, what I find interesting about this is that voice recognition was part of the accessibility thing for people who might have been challenged in some way. Yeah. That, for instance, they could. I have a granddaughter, mm-hmm. for instance, who has cerebral palsy, and typing is difficult for her. So she could use that voice ability. Yeah. With as an accessibility kind of thing. Now everybody is going to have a shot at that. And it's available right now on the Apple platform of Mavericks, which is the current one.
And it was available before, but it wasn't as robust, and mm-hmm. you had to be connected online in order to take advantage of it. This one here, you can be online, but you can also do it in a standalone mode where you're not connected online.
And it won't function all the time. I mean, you could type or do that. Or?
Yeah, you can turn it on and off anytime you want.
Once you've set that preference.
You set the preference system-wide, but within each application, Word, Excel, PowerPoint, whichever one you want to use, you go in, you say edit, start dictation, and then it'll start doing dictation. But even while it's doing dictation, if you want to type, you can go ahead and start typing, and it just automatically types.
Shane, can you imagine doing this with your customers when they say, I want you to do this with my computer and then do this? And, you know, and you write out the work order.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that you probably couldn't do that. But you could, the written version, you could.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't record them without their knowledge. But you could probably do a written transcript without their knowledge.
Yeah, I mean, they could very well just say what's wrong.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah, but because how many times have you done something? I didn't ask you to do that. I asked you to do this, and you know.
Yeah, all the time. Actually, they could work with passwords, and I can't tell you how many times I've called customers for passwords, and
yeah,
and they don't want to write them down.
Yeah,
so
very interesting use of this technology.
I'm finding that I'm really, and I was always one of those guys that didn't like using any kind of voice recognition because, you know, I'm lazy when I speak sometimes. You know, I'm quick or slow or sloppy. I'm finding that with Cortana, you know, I don't use the others, so I'm finding with Cortana, it's more very natural speak for me, more and more.
You know what? It's interesting. I think in some ways, Gary, we talked about this, being in the car and using or anywhere with that smartphones have begun to influence how we use our desktops and laptops as well. For instance, talking to it rather than typing on it.
That's right. Right.
And I know that I am more and more using that speech recognition thing on my iPhone to send messages to people. It's just much handier than using my thumbs.
And it's going to be, I'm not sure how this is going to work in 10 years when they start reading brainwaves.
And the sound is tapped right into your jaw.
Yeah, but just think of the advantages. You're sitting there thinking about a pizza and then it just shows up.
There are advantages, there are distinct disadvantages.
Then there are thoughts that you just don't want anybody to know about.
And if those go out over the airwaves.
And on that note, we will say thank you all very much for joining us here for the Internet Advisor. If you have a question that you would like to ask here on the weekends with us, or during the week, by the way, 24/7, that line is open to you by simply going to internetadvisor.net, and when you get there, go to the Contact Us button and fill in the blanks. Thanks, Annie. Thanks, Rich, for being with us. Gary, Ed, Cal, Shane. It's been a great time here. My name is Foster Brown. We publish our podcasts on Sunday night. You can simply go to internetadvisor.net and look for it there or on your favorite subscription.
You've been listening to a podcast of the Internet Advisor Show, Detroit's longest-running, locally-produced computer show with Foster Brown, Gary Baker, and their team of experts. For more information about our weekly show, to ask a question of our experts, or to find the show notes for this podcast, visit www.internetadvisor.net and look for us on Facebook. Thanks for listening.